We are here for goodness sake. Hello, family. This is Carol Worth with Saltapol LLC, and welcome to the Goodness Forum podcast and YouTube, where goodness is openly discussed and amplified. Our topic today is the power of we, not the game, like W-E, like we. And our guest is a dear friend of mine, Bob Scarfo, and he's going to tell you a little bit about himself. Go ahead.
Great. Thanks, Carol. I'm a landscape architect, and I've taught in universities in Canada and the United States for 40 years. And one of my goals all along has been to bring people together, and so that my students learn how to be professionals before they get out of school, and they're tested all along the way by the folks in the neighborhoods that they help them with.
Oh, wow. A test in the neighborhood. I was a teacher. I never tested anybody in a neighborhood. That's kind of cool.
Well, students, you know, they know the game. They know the learning game. But
right.
You put them in a neighborhood, and it's the rules change.
Right. So it's actually like field work, like a practical.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Absolutely.
Oh, see what I mean? The connection, the power of we.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read, so we always have a quote,
okay.
And so I'm going to read the quote, and then we're just going to talk a little bit. So the quote is from Mother Teresa, who is now Saint Teresa, and here it is. I can do things you cannot. You can do things I cannot. Together, we can do great things. So we chose this quote because, to me, that's what you do. What I know about your work, and I'm going to ask you to talk about, is that you actually have and continue to connect people in the community, businesses and neighborhoods, with your students who are learning how to do the kinds of things that you teach them to do in your programs. So I would love for you to talk about that, because you have all these different people who can do specific things, and then you guys come together and collaborate, and marvelous things happen. So I would love
Super.
For you to share with our audience kind of a little bit more about your background, but then talk about some of the projects that you've been involved with that you facilitated through your classroom.
Well, before I forget it, what I want to say is when I first heard you with the quote from Mother Teresa, where my mind went was, not necessarily that I could do things, but I know things that you don't know.
Mm.
And you know things that I don't know, and together we can do great things. And,
yeah.
You know, I think probably a balance between the two of them, absolutely. But, yeah, a little bit about my background. It was, and I think it was an influence in it. I grew up in a blue-collar Italian neighborhood, and you never paid anybody to do anything. You know, you always did it yourself, or you had somebody down the street. And I think that's really where it kind of started, was this doing things together, you know, asking for help, getting help, you know, heck, what, almost 70 years ago, an early form of paying it forward.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah. You
Are
know,
you that old?
I am that
what?
Old. Thank you.
Doesn't look that old, does he?
So, now I'm blushing.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and so, you know, the 40 years, it's the majority of the projects we worked on in different universities were real, with real people, real clients. And like I say, the kids were tested constantly to be able to turn professional language into street language, into neighborhood language. And on the other hand, they were learning how to draw information and activities and skills out of the neighborhood people. And so there really was this blending and coming together. I think, you know, just a year ago I finished a project with a neighborhood here in Spokane, and we did a series of 6 workshops and then 2 workshops with kids. And all along the way, the neighborhood folks were part of the process. They were contributing, they were talking, they were discussing. And in the final presentation to the city, it wasn't my design, it was
so
the neighborhood's design.
What were you designing?
A new master plan for a 100-year-old park.
Oh.
And the neighborhood, like I say, took an active role in it. They gave ideas. They voted on parts of it. There were a few discussions of things that they wanted or didn't want, and but the majority just, you know, flowed along. And at the end, literally, it was their park, not the professional hired to come in and do it for yeah. them. So.
And what, like, talk a little bit about the students that when they come into your classroom, what do you see that the growth that they experience in stepping out and being connected to the community in that way?
Well, I think your question really brings a lot of things to light, not just university students, and I'll come back to that. But the transition over a semester, or with luck if I have them for several years, is definitely, it's an obvious growth in confidence. Mm-hmm. It's a growth in confidence that's displayed by their being able to ask a stranger questions and being able to discuss the answers. And I think as designers, as landscape architects, and then some of my students were architects and interior designers, the real power we have is that we can do drawings. And now suddenly people start to see their words turned into images, and they can more quickly say, yeah, that's what I, or no, that's not what I was talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and so it really is a maturity. And then since I retired 3 years ago.
Where did you retire from?
The last 19 years I was here with Washington State University.
Yeah.
Before that, University of Maryland. Before that, University of Guelph outside Toronto in Canada. Rutgers, University of Kentucky.
Wow.
And I went willingly from place to place.
You get around, man.
But, you know, but the what your question really brought to mind was I have this very strong belief in youth, mm-hmm. and that kids have just been, I think there are two highly ignored and underutilized resources in all communities, and it's the elderly and it's
yes.
the kids.
Yes.
And you know, it's it's really, when you start to think about it, the schools, until recently, there are a few changes that are coming through that are nice that and really good, but for the most part, schools are on the periphery of a community. Kids are sequestered away in a school for God knows how many hours a day, how many hours a week, how many years, and then all of a sudden they get a certificate and it's, oh, you're ready to go into society. And they don't know what to do.
Right.
You know, and so my university students got that transition. I've been trying to bring that down into high schools and middle schools because, you know, I think the beauty that we could have is that we could have schools without walls. They could be, the community could be the classroom.
Right.
And kids are so much more creative than we give them credit for. And if we give them problems to solve, and that's not to say they're out on their own completely, but there are professionals. There's now what's called a maker space, and it's a space where, and the maker movement, and where kids are given the tools to exercise their creativity, you know, and I honestly think that a community could turn to its kids, and they could. I think there should be at least one, if not two or three schools, a middle school and maybe two high schools, in a community where they are think tanks, and the community brings problems to the kids, and the kids work with professionals and with the community. And begin to transition, begin to learn how to be an adult by being with adults, mm-hmm. and maybe the adults get to remember
learn
what it's like to be a kid.
Learn how to be adults themselves.
Yeah, that too. You know, and contribute products that are beneficial to the community. I've always believed that kids should be learning while they're giving to their
yeah,
community.
Yeah, that's so great. So could you kind of describe to the audience a little bit, you know, as you're talking about this, it's so intriguing to me. But I'm sure, you know, I don't really have a full grasp of what, like, the kind of projects you do, landscape architecture, it's sort of like, maybe I get it, put, you know what I mean? Like, could you describe to them what it is that you do when you're doing a project with, you know, that park that you were just talking about? Like, what does it mean to do landscape architecture?
I think it's that's a good question.
Wow.
It really goes, and I'm not tooting my own horn here. I went back at 37 and got a PhD in social geography, and people go, social geography, what is that? And it's a different form of landscape architecture. It's understanding how people interact with their surroundings and begin to give it character and meaning and form. And that's really, I think a professional landscape architect is as much a psychologist as they are a designer, because if they don't know their client, and I design something for you and I don't understand who you are, when I leave you're going to change it.
Yeah.
If I can really do my job well, you're not only going to cherish it, you're going to take care of it, you're going to maintain it, or the buzzword, you know, of the day is you're going to sustain it.
Yes.
And so sustainability in my mind is not technology, it's not physical hardware, it's people. Mm. And if the people are part of the process, if the people are actively involved in whether they're kids or adults, actively involved in the generation of an environment, then it will sustain itself, because the people will, you know, it's their sense of identity. So years ago at Rutgers University, the university had enough money to buy the materials to develop a landscape between four of the dormitories. And so what we asked them if we could do it was, could we develop a design and then bring all the materials to this area, probably about a 2-acre area, and then have the students install the design. And we started at 8 o'clock one morning. By 6 o'clock that night, the design was done. It went from a mud hole to turf and green grass and mounds and trees. But the funniest thing was that if anybody stepped on the grass, they'd get yelled at from 3 or 4 or 5 different windows.
So let me get the picture of this. So it was like the four dormitories were all facing each other,
yeah.
And so that was sort of like a center.
A big courtyard. Or
big,
yeah,
courtyard,
yeah.
And that's where the green space, the 2-acre,
yeah,
sort,
yeah,
of, I'm imagining a square space.
Yeah.
Square,
yeah,
space.
Well, my favorite was a sign that showed up on the on the lawn there. It said, keep your ass off the grass. Yeah, so. But they took
that's,
care of it.
That's fantastic,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
everybody had a part of it.
Yeah. You know, so again, going back to kids, if kids are allowed to work out of school, you know, right now in the education, K-12 educational movement stuff, there's project-based learning. Well, most of the projects are in the classroom, in,
right,
school. And sure, it's exercising creativity, it's exercising social skills and all that, but it's still not coming from the community and giving back to the community. Mm-hmm. So the kids are still sequestered away in a building, separated from the thing that they're going to become part of.
Right. You know? And so you've done those kinds of projects all along, like where you've connected community,
yes,
and students.
Yeah.
Your entire teaching career, haven't you?
Most of it.
Most,
yeah.
Of,
well,
it.
Definitely the university students. It's only been the last 10 years I've been fortunate enough to bring high school kids into projects, or initially with my university students, and I have to say the high school kids the first year blew the university students out of the water. They really,
what,
did. You know, and this is, I think this is one of the problems, is too many, you know, a lot of the teachers know, you get a kid excited, then get the heck out of their way.
Yeah.
But I think outside of that environment, most people think, well, it's a kid. What does the kid know? What does the child know? And yet, you know, there's some fantastic literature on what kids have produced. Well, in fact, you go to science fairs, and there's a young woman, I think in Odessa here in Washington, who developed a process. She questioned whether or not the water-absorbent material in diapers could be used as an additive, an amendment in soil, and if it would retain moisture and boost the yield of wheat. And she boosted it, I think, 27%, the production of the wheat. So now she's, I think she's got a patent on it. Another of her classmates had another project. There's a young man back in Maryland who came up with a test for, was it pancreatic cancer? And sure. And it went, you know, tests that normally you had to have cancer. Mm-hmm. And you had to be along in the process before the test would show anything. Now his, as soon as you have the protein in your blood, his test shows it right away.
Wow.
And the cost went down from $800. Well, who knows what the, you know, the pharmacies will do, the pharmacists will do with it, or the pharmaceutical industry will do with it. But, you know, it costs, I think we're saying like 6 or 8 cents or something.
Oh,
you know?
My goodness.
It's amazing. And then, you know, kids.
Yeah.
What do kids know?
Well, that's one of the things that we talk about on our stand in this business, is a world that works for everyone, that every child who comes here to this planet is born, is supported in uncovering and developing their gifts and delivering them, because we're really all here to be of service.
Yeah.
And that is beautiful to hear that you're doing that, right? So we want to talk about these kinds of things that are already happening. Like, you're doing great things with kids.
And if you go back to something I said right at the beginning, the other underutilized resource, the elderly.
Right.
You think about their educational background, their experiences, their knowledge. Now you bring that together with the unbridled curiosity of a youngster.
Right.
And both of these are suddenly a major player in any one of their communities, a major contributor to the health and benefit and spirituality of their community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so do you have like a vision of that kind of collaboration between bringing elderly people and youth into projects in your future?
I call it Bob's World. No, I'm kidding.
Bob's World. It's Bob's World.
Actually, I've been doing it. Not to the extent.
So you haven't you've actually been doing it.
Yeah, I think so many of the neighborhood projects, I have business people, there are retirees, because they bring a real, they bring the historic knowledge of the community to play. I'm hesitating because I don't know how to really talk about the melding, the coming together. It's almost idealistic, but it is so wonderful to watch when it's going on.
Yeah. And do you have any projects that you're currently working on?
I'm just finishing up another neighborhood park project, and it was fun. I did workshops with the adults, but I also did two workshops, each with 50 kids, elementary school children.
And where is this at?
This is in Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
And the kids, you know, you hand out crayons, you get them talking about it, and then you just step back, and then you've got to struggle to read their writing and stuff. But that in itself is a creative endeavor. You know?
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so you met with the kids, you met with neighborhood people, and then what happened next?
Each workshop gets more and more specific based on the outcomes of the previous one, and eventually what I have is a list of wishes, and then that's what I bring together in terms of the historic character, the ecological character, the surrounding character, and this is where then the neighborhood begins to see their wishes haven't been ignored. It wasn't just words, it was actual, you know, there it is. I contributed to that. So,
yeah. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So wonderful. So do you do this now as generally just consulting, or is it part of, do you have a business doing this?
Yeah, I consult under the name of Land and Life out of Spokane, Washington. And it's not just a public parks and stuff. I've been involved in a couple projects with elderly, with what is called aging in place, and allowing people. Again, our environments were designed by people who were very healthy, and it wasn't until maybe 40 years ago that the barrier-free design came in, and that eventually became American Disabilities Act, but now there are designers, again, architects, landscape architects, interior designers, who are employing this approach to enable people to live longer in their own homes, to live longer in their own communities, instead of having to go to an adult care facility. So they can still be an active part of the community.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. So you're part of the, you're involved in those kinds of projects as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
The whole age spectrum.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm feathering my own nest, because I'm getting there.
Funny. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. So in the show notes, we'll make sure that we have information on how to get in touch.
Okay, super.
With that, I guess, is it a company or is it just a...
It's an LLC.
Okay.
Land and Life LLC.
Okay,
like I say, Spokane, Washington. There's it's landandlife.com on the web. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have links to that.
Super.
Well, thank you so much, Bob, for
Wonderful.
Talking with us.
Yeah,
it's a great way to connect people when you're bringing in both age spectrums,
mm-hmm.
but it brings everyone together.
Yeah, it has
that potential. And really, yeah, it's so exciting to hear that people are doing these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so if people wanted to contact you and open a discussion or dialogue, or were interested in having you come to their neighborhood park or to do things
mm-hmm.
of that nature, they could contact you through that.
They could do that, or if, who knows where your listeners are, there's landscape architects all over the world. And they've got a lot of the background that I do, so, you know.
But you could point them in the right direction
yeah,
if they
sure.
were needing some,
sure.
you know, advice or
yeah.
guidance.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
For being here. I really appreciate you and appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thank
it's,
you.
It's a real contribution, you know?
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, thank you for viewing this first episode of our second season. Come back next time where you get an opportunity to meet another extraordinary person who is doing extraordinary good and spreading positivity. Thank you, we love you, and we'll see you next time.